This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Today I'm announcing my resignation.
A sudden resignation. A Republican who serves on the Wisconsin Elections Commission announces he's resigning, leaving a key position open heading into the midterms. Plus, Democrats are begging their GOP colleagues to act on gun safety measures in wake of the horrific Texas school shooting. And it was an eventful GOP state convention over the weekend. We have all the highlights coming up. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 27th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., this week we're going to start with kind of a bombshell that happened at the Wisconsin Elections Commission meeting, where we originally thought the meeting was about to elect a new chair, as Ann Jacobs, who's a Democrat, served her 2 years, and after the next 2 years, then it goes to a Republican. Republican Commissioner Dean Knudsen kind of dropped a very shocking revelation that he wants to resign from his position. So now the focus is on who Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is going to appoint to that commission. Now, of course, Speaker Voss said he's not going to be ruling anyone out. We both talked to him this week. Looks like he wants to have someone from a legal background, not anyone who is focused on relitigating the 2020 election, doesn't want someone who is, you know, basically wants to decertify the election. We're going to get into the weeds on who might he pick and what he told us this week. But let's first hear from Dean himself, who basically said, well, I felt pressure from top Republicans to resign. Let's take a listen.
Today, I'm announcing my resignation from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, effective upon the appointment of my successor. It's been made clear to me that from the highest levels of the Republican Party in Wisconsin, that there was a deep desire that I not be chair. I'll put my conservative record up against anyone in the state of Wisconsin. And yet, now I've been branded a rhino. The painful truth is that President Trump lost the election in 2020, lost the election in Wisconsin in 2020. And the loss was not due to election fraud. But my message to Republicans today is simple. If you're a candidate, focus on the issues that affect Wisconsin families and their pocketbooks. It's time to pivot away from conspiracy theories to kitchen table issues.
So I first kind of want to step back a little bit, too, because we also got to bring up the fact that Bob Spindell, who was also a Republican, he thought he had a pretty good lane to become chairperson. But now it's basically up to him or whoever Speaker Voss appoints, because it has to be a Republican. Now, I want to kind of also talk about the pressure that Dean said that, hey, I felt like I some, you know, people didn't align with my views. I don't believe that the 2020 election was stolen. Joe Biden won fair and square. So a lot of stuff kind of happened after his announcement, where basically we had to figure out, well, who was this top Republican that asked him to step down? And we're kind of hearing that no one asked him to resign, but U.S. Senator Ron Johnson kind of had some concerns.
So ultimately, this is about who's going to be the chair of the State Elections Commission. With Dean, he's been a lightning rod for some of the base, the Stop the Steal crowd, Republican base, because if you go back, remember, in December of 2020, there was this hearing before the Assembly Campaign Elections Committee in which Dean went and said there was no widespread fraud. It was the first kind of blow against this narrative from Donald Trump of the election was stolen. Here is the person who helped write the legislation to create the Elections Commission saying there was no widespread fraud. That made him on the outs with those folks right away. Been pressuring him. He's been around for a long time with the commission. There's a certain shelf life to being on one of these things. Dean, I get the impression, has kind of been tired of like being part of the circus. Now, the chair thing. Under commission rules, only there are six members of the commission, three Dems, three Republicans. The clerks cannot serve as chair. That means either Bob Spindell or Robin Voss's pick has to be the chair. Bob Spindell on Monday told me, I am unequivocally running for chair of the Elections Commission. Here's the problem, for Bob at least. You have to have four votes of the six-member commission to become chair. There is no way Ann Jacobs, Mark Thompson or Julie Clancy are going to vote for Bob Spindell to become chair of the commission, because Bob Spindell has, A, spoke at a December 2020 rally in which people claimed the election was stolen. He has bashed the Elections Commission, how the election was run. Oh, and by the way, he's one of the 10 false electors who signed papers sent to the federal government claiming to cast Wisconsin's votes for Donald Trump when Joe Biden won Wisconsin. Now, Spindell has said that, hey, I did this as part of a legal strategy to preserve Trump's options as he sought to unsuccessfully to overturn the election results. That said, that's, you're not getting a Dem vote to become chair because of that. So Spindell pushed forward, said, hey, during the hearing on Wednesday, let's vote anyway. Even though Dean wants to leave, let's vote. I want to run. And he said, I can restore confidence in the Elections Commission, which if you're a Democrat is an interesting proposition, because you're claiming that you can restore confidence in the commission because even though you are somebody who's bashed it. And oh, by the way, now he's bashed it but said it's the only way to really run things. He doesn't want to go to a Secretary of State. But you're somebody who participated in this scheme for Donald Trump where you've been sued about it. There was a complaint filed against you over it. Like, I'm not sure Democrats are going to go for that. So Dean can't be chair with the grassroots, right? Ron Johnson says that, his office says that Ron Johnson expressed to Robin Voss that the grassroots lost confidence in Dean. So if Dean's not an option to become chair, you got to find somebody else. And that's what this is all about. Who's going to be chair? Now, Robin Voss's pick, go one of two ways. He could pick somebody with a legal background. Like he said, he wants somebody looking forward, right?
Right.
Robin Voss has had a problem with the part of the base that's the Stop Steal crowd. At convention this past weekend, he got booed because he said, you can't decertify the election results. There was a resolution to remove him as speaker, which failed. There's a resolution to decertify the results. That also failed. If Robin picks somebody who is not of that mindset, right, he's going to get more flack from those folks. If he picks somebody who is of that mindset, A, you're going to create a circus-like atmosphere with the commission, and B, he's still not going to get credit with those folks who believe the election was stolen because they don't trust him anyway. So what I'm getting at is this pick is very important for Robin Voss and the commission itself, because it's going to indicate where Robin is going. And two, how's this commission going to function? Is it going to be, you know, a person who's like in Spindell's mindset, who's like more of a partisan hard charger, or not? Don't forget, too, Bob Spindell tweeted after the meeting on Wednesday that he was still running for chair, pointing out that Dean sided with Democrats to not do the vote on Wednesday, and that Republicans weren't going to settle for a fake Republican chair picked by the Democrats. So Bob Spindell's not going without a fight. So this is going to be interesting. A lot of pressure on this pick for Robin Voss here in the next 10 days because they meet June 10th. 12 days. June 10th they meet. He wants to have somebody in place before then to take Dean's place. So it's going to be very, very interesting.
I spoke to Speaker Voss yesterday and also asked him, there was this idea floating around there, well, if he wants someone with legal background, maybe it'll be Michael Gableman. He kind of skirted that question. Of course, clip of what we just talked about, Michael Gableman, you know, has said some false claims about the election. And also someone else who basically threw their hat in for this seat is State Senator Kathy Brenier, who is resigning her post. She's leaving, one of the massive crowds, I guess, of lawmakers leaving, but she has an election background. Mm-hmm. She was the Chippewa County Clerk for many, many years, and she believes she can do it. But she also said, well, I think I'm going to, in a sense, piss off a lot of people if I am in that seat. And I think when I spoke to her too, she means kind of realistically doesn't think maybe she'll get that because of her relationship with Voss and who he's looking for in a legal background. But it remains to be seen. So he's got a lot of voicemails, he said yesterday, that he hasn't gotten to.
That Voss choice, he could pick somebody who would not fit with the Stop the Steal crowd. Or if he picked Brenier, he'd be putting a stick in the eye of that crowd. I don't know if he wants to aggravate them more.
Well, because she's a very outspoken, we didn't say, she's a very outspoken critic of you know, Trump claiming that the election was rigged and all those other claims that we talk about often on the show. All right, well, JR, let's move on from elections. Like we said, June 10th, we should have a decision by then, and Voss is expected to at least announce who he wants to run for that seat. Also, some very sad news this week, once again, is bringing up renewed calls for gun safety measures after a school shooting in Texas. Now, Democrats, for years, almost after every school shooting, immediately goes on their platform saying, we need universal background checks, let's implement red flag laws. That would basically allow a judge to take guns away from those who pose a threat to themselves or others. Democratic Attorney Josh Call on earlier this week had a press conference on a separate matter, but basically urge Republican leaders to do something, to act on something. I think we know what happens in this building across the street at the state capitol. Republicans are resistance. They don't want to mess with Second Amendment rights. We're going to get to their views in a little bit, but let's first hear from Governor Evers, who taped a video message basically pleading once again, say, hey, I'm here. Let's find some common ground. But we'll get to it that Voss basically rejected that call. Let's take a listen from Evers.
We cannot accept that gun violence just happens. We cannot accept that kids might go to school and never come home. I still refuse to believe that when our kids are murdered in their desk at school, that there is any party line that's not worth crossing. I want to be clear today. I will work with any Republican who wants to find common ground, who wants to make progress on gun safety, who wants to pass legislation a majority of Wisconsinites will support. Let's work together and do the right thing. Enough has been enough for too damn long already.
So we haven't heard from one person is Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu on where he stands on these issues. But a lot of people did get to hear from Speaker Voss this week, who basically said, you know, I don't think we need to make any changes to gun laws, but I'd be open to adding more security guards, people with law enforcement backgrounds to carry guns in schools. Also floated the idea of having armed teachers, which he kind of got some flack for. But when I spoke to him, he basically clarified that it's not just any teacher, as long as they have, you know, come from a law enforcement background, have training with a firearm, if that were to happen. Now, that idea, JR, has been floated around the Capitol once again, after these tragic school shootings that happen, but nothing ultimately comes. Speaker Voss is not willing to come back on this. But there's an opportunity maybe to work on more school safety security measures down the road. But it doesn't seem like there's an immediate act that Republican leaders would come back into a special session to do anything.
No, look, Republicans, one, philosophically aren't in tune with doing red flag laws, those kinds of things, universal background checks. They are overwhelmingly supported in the Marquette poll, overwhelmingly popular. Republicans have not been fazed by those numbers for years. They are all in safe seats for the most part. The maps are drawn in such a way that they're not going to get pressure for a general election for something like that. It's about a primary. The politics just aren't there for Republicans who, again, philosophically don't agree with those measures and, B, aren't facing real pressure in their districts because where the maps are drawn, this is not going to go anywhere.
When it comes to beefing up school security, we also heard from a lot of Republican candidates running for governor. Rebecca Clayfish said, hey, you know, I was around when she was lieutenant governor when the legislature passed the $100 million Wisconsin Department of Justice school safety grants. A lot of schools got a big chunk of money, majority Madison and Milwaukee, because they're the state's largest school districts. But they did a lot of upgrades, intercom systems. Some hired, you know, school safety resource officers, bulletproof windows, those type of things. So that's where, at least we know, Rebecca Clayfish wants to go. She wants to expand those grants. And then we heard from Kevin Nicholson this week, too. He's open to possibly arming teachers, but he's more in lane with hiring SROs, just having more people in there for security measures. Didn't hear from Tim Michaels or Tim Rantham at all this week, but it kind of just once again puts into focus, you know, if Wisconsin were to elect a Republican governor, what they might want to do on this. But overall, it doesn't seem immediate action will be happening anytime soon.
No, and one of the issues, I mean, besides the horrible tragedy in Texas, is the shifting narrative coming out of Texas about what actually happened, the response from police. Was there an armed guard on site when this shooter arrived? At first, we were told that he was engaged right away. Now we're told that didn't happen. It's hard to know, with all these proposals being floated out there, what would have actually worked or possibly prevented this person from going in. One thing we know is an 18-year-old who bought two AR-15s. Different states have different laws for when you can buy an AR-15. I do not see the Republicans in the state legislature of Wisconsin raising the age or putting some kind of like restriction buying an AR-15 anytime soon. So that is one thing we know that would have prevented this one shooter, right? Because 18 with two AR-15s, I don't know that's going to get any legs in the legislature if there's a proposal to impact when you can buy that kind of a gun.
And even when you look over the past decade, Republican lawmakers have been largely more focused on loosening gun laws instead of tightening them. We're going to pull up a timeline that where I just kind of highlighted some of the bills over the years that Republicans passed when it came to gun laws. Back in 2011, they loosened restrictions on transporting guns and vehicles. 2015, Governor Scott Walker signed a pair of bills that remove the 48-hour waiting period to purchase firearms and would allow off-duty or retired police officers to carry concealed firearms into public schools. Fast forward to 2017, there was a renewed concealed carry permits that now they're valid for 5 years from the expiration date once you want to get them renewed. And then just this year alone, JR, we saw a lot of proposals, all of them vetoed by Governor Tony Evers, but that would have allowed gun owners to have their firearms in their cars when dropping off their kid to and from school. I believe it was Senator Andre Jacques who introduced that bill and said, well, we basically don't want parents going to school and breaking the law if they accidentally have their weapon on them. There was another bill that would allow out-of-state gun owners to legally carry in Wisconsin, regardless if those states do background checks. And like I mentioned before, all bills Governor Evers has vetoed. Now we get to the fun part. We had a fun weekend, but it wasn't as long as we expected. It was a long day on Saturday covering the Republican state convention. One of the biggest headlines after much debate is delegates first voted on that resolution to put a no endorsement option on delegates' ballots. Then we started hearing from all of the candidates, and I'm sure people are caught up by now, but another headline, too, was that none of the Republican candidates for governor reached that threshold. They needed 60% to win the party's endorsement. Rebecca Clayfish came closest. She was roughly about 55%. Meanwhile, 43% of delegates voted not to endorse on the final round of ballot. Kevin Nicholson, Rantham, Tim Michaels all received numbers in the single in the single digits. Before we get into the weeds about this, too, Senator Ron Johnson also, of course, won his endorsement. He doesn't have any primary opponent or primary opponent on the Republican side. And basically, his speech was all about that the media is my biggest opponent, in his words, as he seeks the third term. So let's hear from him, and then we'll do all the fun recap afterwards.
So there's no doubt about it that we need to defeat the radical left ideology, the radical left governance, the radical left policies. But we need to welcome people from all parties. Our coalition is a very inclusive coalition. We want to include everybody, regardless of race or color or creed or gender or sexual preference. Anybody who loves this country needs to be part of our coalition to save this country, because that's what's on the ballot in November. This is not somebody else's fight. This is our fight, and it is a fight that we absolutely must win. God bless all of you. God bless America. God bless Wisconsin.
So what does not having an endorsement mean, right? We had Paul Farrow on here last week. Essentially, if you got the endorsement, you got all 72 counties, you got all the resources, you get a big chunk of funding. So without that now in the governor's race, JR, I think initially who the person has impacted the most is Rebecca Clayfish. I mean, she's worked the hardest, really wanted this endorsement, and now it could, even though she said afterwards to reporters, it's not going to impact my campaign, you haven't seen my numbers yet. But it's a slight blow.
Oh, absolutely. It's also a missed opportunity. So think about this. The convention is full of people who are party activists who I see the same 200 to 300 people at convention every year. They know Rebecca Clayfish. They've been around her for a long time. They are her crowd. What's more, there are rules about becoming a delegate that come up from county parties. So a lot of these folks were locked into place, like they cleared eligibility requirements back in like December of last year to come to convention. So Clayfish, it was before Michaels got in, before Nicholson got in, probably before Rantham got in. Clayfish has had this list. She's been working that crowd to know, these are my people. I'm trying to get that convention endorsement. The issue for her is she had a decent showing, short of 60%, but it wasn't like in the 40s or the 30s, which have been really bad. But for her, the missed opportunity is the state party can't do $1 million ad buy for you, right? They don't have the resources to do that. What can happen, though, is the party can promote you in its turnout operation in August. They're going to go tell their voters, hey, turn out to vote in August. It's a dry run for the November election. And also because of campaign finance rules, if you are a major donor who has tapped out to Clayfish in terms of individual donation, you could, in theory, give an unlimited donation to the party and say, I want this to go to the governor's race. That would be a way to put more money in because Tim Michaels has a deep checkbook. Kevin Nicholson has Dick Uihlein, a big backer who's written massive checks before for groups that supported him. That's the challenge. She misses the infrastructure. If the state party had endorsed her, they would have been like using their field operation when they turned people out for August to promote her. She announced this week she's hiring, like, I think 7 or 10 new field people. It shows you that the it puts more of a burden on her to get that stuff done. Now, the overall impact of the race, though, is negligible because there were two frontrunners going in. Clayfish, because of her connection to the base all these years, and Michaels, because of his money. Kevin Nicholson, people tell me, has been boxed out by Tim Michaels since Tim got in. They're both veterans, business people, outsiders, that kind of thing. Michaels, though, writes a big check. Nicholson can't. Dick Uihlein can, but Nicholson can't. Tim Rantham, going to get his 5-7% of the primary vote, somewhere around there. That's what he is. So there are two going in. There are two coming out. Clayfish still has the grassroots kind of support, though not the endorsement. Michaels has the money. How is it going to change? And I get really split reactions about the trajectory of this race. Some people tell me that Clayfish is just so far ahead that Michaels can't catch her unless he tears her down. And there are questions about Michaels he has to answer. Others look at say the trajectory is he's going to overtake her at some point, and she won't have the resources to compensate or to push back against that. We'll see. Yeah. We'll find out in another month and a half, see where the race is at. But again, the general trajectory of two frontrunners hasn't changed after what happened last weekend.
Exactly. And another big question mark is when and if former President Donald Trump will endorse in this race. I heard it's likely to come soon. When that will be depends. And who will he pick, right? All of them, I believe all of them besides Kevin Nicholson, all four candidates, visited Trump at Mar-a-Lago, tried to sweet talk him, say, here's who I am, here's my platform, would love your endorsement. But it remains to be seen how powerful Trump's endorsement can be because of other primary races that we've seen over the last month or two. Some it works for, some Republicans it doesn't work for, and other Republicans overcome it without his support. So yeah, that's just something to keep an eye on. Before we go into stock picks this week, just of course want to bring forth the Democratic side. They were outside the state convention, basically calling Republicans radical for having this convention in Dane County. I'll just read a quick quote from Ben Wickler, who said, Governor Evers wakes up trying to do the right thing for Wisconsinites. These Republican candidates for governor seem to want to be doing the most extreme thing to appeal to Donald Trump. Excuse me. All right, JR, stock picks this week. Rising, you have Senator Patrick Teston and AG candidate Eric Toney.
So, endorsement votes, much like with Clayfish, they didn't win the endorsement of the party, but they did better than people expected, but for two different reasons, but for the same driving factor. They both did the work with the grassroots. Let's take Teston first, okay? LG race, there were 9 candidates on the ballot going into convention. There were 7 vying for the endorsement of the party. He got to the mid-40s in a wide-open field. That's a pretty decent number. It underscores that Teston's been in since last fall. He's been going to Lincoln Day dinners. He's been doing that kind of groundwork with the party. So that's probably why it helped. Now, the flip side is, again, the two frontrunners like the governor's race going in and two coming out. It's Teston and Roger Roth. Roger Roth did not have a good showing during convention for the endorsement vote. Same time, you know, those people argue that, look, the kind of the heart of the no endorsement movement for the party is kind of Roger's base. So he wasn't like really playing for that. Maybe that's just kind of an excuse, but that said, he did say, I'm not looking for your endorsement now, let's move on. He has more money than Teston. What I'm watching is, can Roger use those resources the last 3-4 weeks of the race to do an effective paid media campaign to swing things his way? Again, not a great showing for him. Teston comes out maybe a little bit of an edge in the front runner battle, but Roger has more money. Watch how that plays out. The AG race, I think, was a more fascinating one because Eric Toney has had the snot beat out of him by Adam Jarko and Jarko's allies that he's not sufficiently conservative enough, right? This is a guy who filed but then dropped charges over the original stay-at-home order that Governor Evers issued. Jarko keeps pounding him about he's been, you know, going after small business owners, all these things, trying to say this guy is not conservative enough. Toney in the mid-50s for the endorsement
right.
vote.
Yeah.
Jarko was in the 20s, no endorsement, 19. That was not a good sign for Adam Jarko. Now, there are a couple of things about Jarko, right? I mean, one, people thought, well, this is his crowd. This is the conservative, the real conservative activist base, and they weren't happy. They weren't going toward Jarko. So is it because Tony is actually a prosecutor? I mean, Jarko does not have any experience as a prosecutor. Tony does. He kind of steps out of that kind of central casting for Republicans of experience as a prosecutor, et cetera. Now, Tony's challenge is he's not raising much money. Jarko pulled in more money the first month he was in, his campaign says, than Tony raised in all of 2021. Tony has to capitalize on this with a better fundraising number. We'll see July 15th, I think, to show he's got the wherewithal to actually like springboard from this to winning the nomination. It does raise a question. Are Republicans going to go for Jarko because he wants to be the activist fighter, you know, kind of model of an attorney general? We're not used to that in Wisconsin. Other states have that. We're used to like somebody who's been a prosecutor before.
Right.
So it's kind of fascinating to watch. But for both Tony and Tustin, they work the grassroots. Those are the folks who show up. So that's probably why they did so well in those votes.
All right. And mixed this week, we have the next candidate who threw in their hat for the state Supreme Court race.
Yeah, Janet Petrosiak. So, Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge. She checks a lot of boxes for progressives and what they like for Supreme Court candidates. She's a sitting judge. She's a former prosecutor. She can self-finance, and she is a woman. Those have all been successful combinations the last couple of Supreme Court races for them. Now, the flip side is she's also not hiding, like, shying away from being a partisan. In her coming out announcement, she says, you know, basically says, like, a law and order background, if you break the law, you should pay a penalty, but also decries right-wing attacks on her basic liberty. She's going to be a fighter there. This race is going to be the Supreme Court race to end all be all. Man,
right.
It's going to be like many millions of dollars. It's going to be very, very nasty. So you have her officially announced. Everett Mitchell, which is a judge in Dane County, he's been kicking the tires on her race. Daniel Kelly, former Supreme Court justice, has been talking about running again for a while. He was at state convention on Friday night, pressing the flesh. Now, I talked to Daniel Kelly. He said, well, I've made a decision. Yeah, I'll make one sometime this summer. But you usually don't go to a convention to meet people unless
right.
you're running for something. So let's assume Daniel Kelly is in, right?
Yeah.
Daniel Kelly probably is going to be unchallenged on the conservative side because he's a former Supreme Court justice. Already, Pat Rogensack's daughter, who is retiring from the court, a conservative, Ellen Brostrom, she had talked about running for Supreme Court, but told supporters earlier that it's just not there because people are gravitating towards Daniel Kelly. Rebecca Bradley, a sitting justice, thinks Daniel Kelly basically is one of the best justices she's ever worked with. If you're a conservative and you donate to Supreme Court races, where Rebecca Bradley is, you're probably going to go. So Kelly's there. Janet's in. Let's see what Everett does, maybe some others. But this race is going to be about gerrymandering, abortion, election laws, control the court. I know conservatives say they've been hagadorned. It's not really a conservative court.
Right.
But it is really a 4-3 conservative majority. This seat would give a true opportunity for liberals to have the court controlled back for the first time since 2008 when Lewis Butler lost the seat. And Wisconsin Family Action, they tweeted about Janet basically saying abortion is on the ballot in this race because if the Supreme Court of the United States follows through with the decision we saw, overturns Roe v. Wade, there will then be discussions about what happens in Wisconsin.
Right.
We have the 1849 statute. Is that still applicable? Or what goes on? We talked before. Is there a right to an abortion in the Wisconsin Constitution? I'm not saying there is, but if you're four justices of the Supreme Court of Wisconsin say there is. That's the way it works.
Right.
So this race is going to be massive.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. The amount of money spent will be good for TV stations once again.
Yes.
It'll be interesting.
All right, we got about 30 seconds left. We got falling this week, Kevin Schabelsky.
Former state senator. Look, he's a former lawmaker who now is agreed to plead guilty to federal charges for basically not covering about $200,000 in unemployment tax or employment taxes. This happened last week. Kind of had a busy week, didn't get a chance to talk to it, but this is one of the best rise and fall stories in Wisconsin politics. I'll try and condense it. He was on the Joint Finance Committee, was going to become a candidate for lieutenant governor, voted to move a budget repair bill in 2002 with Republicans on the committee. Democrats got mad, got Barb Lotner against him. He lost the primary for lieutenant governor despite having like $400,000 in the bank, which Jim Doyle would have loved to have with him on the ballot that fall. Schabelsky becomes tourism secretary. The primary for his seat, this guy Alex Paul was an attorney. secretly financed an ad campaign knocking Julie Lassa as beholden to Chuck Kawala, who was facing corruption charges at the time. When that all kind of came out, Schabowski had to suddenly go spend time with his family and leave the Doyle administration. He falls off the radar, does really well in business, and now he falls again with these charges. So it's one of the more fascinating stories in Wisconsin politics.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that will do it for this very busy week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Have a good weekend.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.